LLC is what we're calling think like a customer. Hey, what do you call your customers? You know, bankers call them depositors, lawyers call them clients, advertising executives call them accounts, merchants call them buyers, doctors call them patients, manufacturers call them dealers. And you know, sometimes salespeople would like to call them pain in the neck. Well, restaurateurs call them diners, airlines call them passengers, hotel operators call them guests, theater managers call them patrons, magazines call them subscribers, insurance companies call them policyholders. And as my customer in this series, I call you a listener. Whatever they're called, all have one thing in common. They were all prospects before they became customers. And for you as a sales professional, there's almost nothing more important than giving your customers the service they deserve. And you can take it even one step further. You can amaze your customer. In the previous message on the concept of 10 to win, we discussed the idea that you can think of selling as a game in which you and your prospect work as a team. When your points plus your prospect's points add up to 10, it's a sale, and you both win. So let's take a look at your prospect, knowing, of course, that every sales situation is unique. But just for our illustration purposes, and to give you a start in creating your own list of prospect qualities, here are the 10 that seem to be present most often in highly qualified prospects. Now, the ideal prospect, actually, I made a list for you. Let me read it to you. Has money, has a need or a want, feels the urgency to act now, is open-minded, is decisive, is honest, has been positively preconditioned, is accessible, will be a center of influence for you, and was referred to you by a satisfied customer. Okay, now let's get to some specifics on those 10 qualities. The first one, has money. Now, as you know, this could mean cash, or it could mean the prospect's company budget, or it could mean the prospect's ability to finance or to qualify for your financing plan. In any case, it's necessary to have the money, or at least figure out how they can get the money. Now, one good example of a salesperson's creativity in this area occurred when I went along on a series of sales calls for a farm equipment organization here in Arizona. After making a few set appointments, the sales rep I was with decided to go on a gold call. He told me that for years, this farmer in Pima County had been stopping by at his dealership to kick a few tractor tires and look at a piece of specialty equipment used in harvesting cotton, fine Pima cotton, as it's called. But the farmer never bought anything. He just rent what he needed. We drove up to the farmhouse, and a friendly greeting led to a mini-verbal presentation. And, of course, as soon as the sales rep got to the subject of money, the farmer's objection was the same as it had been for years. I just can't afford it, and I don't have the cash. Well, most buyers didn't pay cash. They either set up lease payments or buy these very expensive pieces of farm machinery on time. No problem, the sales pro said, as he switched his focus to their finance plan and the new low rates they had for that season. Very reasonable rates, he told the farmer, who firmly but politely said, "Listen, son, I've been farming all my life, and I have never financed anything. If I can't pay cash, I don't get it. And at my age, I'm not about to break my perfect record." Well, like you, I'd have thought this is a no-sales situation. I mean, how do you deal with that objection? Well, in message number 10 on responding to objections, we're going to go into more detail on that. But now, since money is our point here, what the sales pro did next, I mean, I'll just never forget it. With a big smile and a thoughtful, concerned tone, he said to the farmer, "I can sure respect you for holding to your values and only paying cash for what you buy. Not many people can do that. I was just wondering, though, does Mrs. Farmer have the same cash-only record?" Well, instantly the farmer shot back and he said, "Are you kidding, son? She's got charge cards and accounts all over the place." Well, after just a slight pause, our top 1% club member said softly, "Well, since Mrs. Farmer doesn't have a perfect record to protect, what do you think of putting that new piece of equipment that you've been wanting so long in her name, and you'll still have your perfect record?" Well, I thought the farmer was going to fall over. With a big smile, he said, "My gosh, son, why didn't we do that years ago? Great idea." I was amazed how this sales pro thought of such a great way to handle the money situation. He knew the farmer wanted that new equipment, and he knew he only paid cash for it. And most likely that time would just never come. But the salesperson also knew that every problem has a solution. And that day, he sure used creativity to solve his. So how many creative ways can you think of to deal with the money? The more options you can think of, the more sales you'll make. Next is a need or a want. Remember at the beginning of our last message, we used the example of the prospector from the Old West looking for hidden wealth in the ground. As a miner, he had to crawl around over and under rocks. So one of the needs the prospector had was for clothing that would be durable and not wear out. When ore samples were found, he'd carry them in his back pockets of his pants till he got to the assayer's office in town. So he needed pockets that wouldn't be torn by the ore. So along comes Levi Strauss, a sales pro, selling dry goods to retail stores in San Francisco and to tailors throughout the Old West. One tailor named Jacob Davis from Reno, Nevada, wrote to Levi Strauss saying that he had come up with a new idea. Using Strauss's heavy-duty cloth material, he found a way to rivet the pocket corners to keep them from tearing, and he suggested they patent the process. Well, Levi had the $68 for the filing fee, and Jacob had the riveting idea. So on May 20th, 1873, they got their patent and formed Levi Strauss & Company. And with that, Levi 501 jeans were created to fill a need, a great solution to a problem. That's need selling. Now let's fast forward to the 21st century, and those Levi 501 jeans are still selling to millions of people, and most likely they aren't miners with ore samples in their pockets. But who buys them? You and I do, because they're in and we want them, and for sure we don't need them. Now you might be saying, hold on, Joel, Levi 501 jeans aren't in with my crowd. Well, you might be right, because they've hit many highs and lows since that day in 1873. But they still sell big time. You know, going into the millennium, all kinds of lists were published to commemorate the previous century. One list from a Forbes magazine report showed the top 10 greatest fortunes that were made in the 20th century in the clothing industry. And on that list were some familiar names: Phil Knight from Nike, Ralph Lauren of Ralph Lauren Polo, Leslie Wexner of The Limited, and oh yes, five out of the other seven on the list were heirs of old Levi Strauss. And on the list of the next 10 richest, even more of Levi's heirs. So Mr. Levi Strauss sure knew how to fill a need and keep filling it. I bet you have a pair of those jeans somewhere in your closet. Well, the same is true of what you sell. The ideal prospect needs or wants your products. That need could be conscious or unconscious. And there's a big difference, as you know. People invest in or buy what they want, not just what they need. Now, sometimes it's a need. Other times it's a want. Make sure you know the difference. I mean, just look around your office or your home. Did you buy only what you needed? I mean, do you see any brand names, designer clothes, a luxury car, electronic gadgets? A home on a private water skiing lake? Hey, needs turned into wants are the ideal. Third is the prospect quality of urgency. You may have lost sales because of the put-off or delay objection. This indicates that the prospect didn't feel any urgency, any desire to act now. You want your ideal prospect to feel the need to act now, today, this minute, and it's worth a full point when your prospect has this quality. But how do you know it's the right time? Well, you usually don't. As an example, one evening right after dinner, the phone rings at our house. It was someone named Warren, a house painter, and he was just gold calling. He said, "Do you need a painter?" Now, on a 1-low, 10-high scale of great sales lines, that rate's about a -1. But it just happened that our regular painter had just retired, and we really needed our entire house painted. Warren set up an appointment on the phone to come over with his partner Ken and give us a price. Well, when they got there, they were two young guys from Minnesota just starting out in Arizona. We checked their references, and we hired them. So now, over 20 years later, Ken and his father-in-law Roland are still painting for us. Well, how come? Good workmanship, plus perfect timing years ago, and our urgency. Now, the fourth quality of the ideal prospect is an open mind. This kind of prospect will listen, ask questions, and openly evaluate your product and its benefits. Now, this sounds like a simple thing, but in some situations, it's one of the most difficult qualities to find, especially when the prospects are highly educated, extremely knowledgeable, very busy, and have gigantic egos. You know the type of egotistical prospect I mean. He'd go broke if he had to pay taxes on what he thinks he's worth. He's carried on a great love affair for years, unassisted. He really believes that if he had never been born, God would have had a lot of explaining to do. I mean, you know the type, so self-impressed, so much in need of attention. At a funeral, he's sorry he isn't the corpse. Yes, selling can be tough. In an industry loaded with people whose ego is so big, they think they know everything, and no salesperson can tell them anything. So when you find an open-minded prospect, give them one point. Now, as you look for these open-minded prospects, keep in your mind that there are things you can do to improve the receptivity of your prospects. So think creatively. And here's a good example. Over the years, one industry I've worked a lot in is the financial services industry. Putting on seminars is one way financial consultants find prospects. Now, of course, while they're up in front of a group, it's tough to rate their prospects in the audience since they don't know much about them. So one financial consultant I knew would begin her free seminars, usually co-sponsored by a service club or a civic organization, with this visual. 12,053 times 5 equals 60,266. Nothing but those three sets of numbers. She'd open the meeting and ask the group to guess what those numbers meant. Well, wild guesses usually resulted, none of them being correct. Next, she'd hold up a bag from a fast food chain with a hamburger, fries, dessert, and a soft drink in it and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, those three numbers represent the cost of your meals after retirement if you only live a normal life expectancy," which at that time was 76 years. She'd quickly explain that if you were to retire at age 65, then in the next 11 years you'd probably eat 12,053 meals. If each meal cost you only $5, like the one she had, you'd need $60,266 just to feed yourself. And then she'd say, "Today's seminar is designed to help you prepare for that expense and all the others you'll have during those 11 years. Wow. I mean, that was a powerful attention-getting opening. So do you have a way to gain your prospects' rapt attention? Think creatively. And how do you use that positive attention to open up their mind to new ideas? Next is decisiveness. That's the ability to look at a situation, weigh the advantages and disadvantages, and then act. Honesty is also worth a full point on that list of ideal prospect qualities. Honest prospects will tell you what their real objections are. They will level with you up front, and they keep leveling with you after the sale. Now, you might not always like what they tell you, but at least they will always tell you what they think. Like the old story of a family who had an only child who didn't speak. They had the boy tested by experts, and there was no physical reason for him not saying a word. He just didn't ever speak. The boy grew up, started going to school, did well in school, yet not a word. His parents accepted it and just loved him the way he was. Then one day at age 8, sitting at the dinner table, the boy looked at his mom and dad and loudly and clearly said, "The mashed potatoes are cold." Well, his parents were amazed. After a moment of shock, they asked him, "Son, how come all these years you haven't spoken a word?" The boy looked at his parents and replied, "Well, up until now, everything was okay." Okay, I know it's a little corny and silly, yet it really makes a good point. You've got to get feedback, honest feedback, and that's worth one point. Positive preconditioning is the next quality you'd like your ideal prospect to have. Now, this could be the result of advertising, or it could be word-of-mouth promotion. This kind of prospect has heard good things about your product, your company, or you. For example, because of all the good things I've told you about taxi driver Willie Cooley in Memphis, Tennessee, and Jim Hayes in Phoenix, Arizona, you'd earn a full point as one of Willie's or Jim's prospects because you've been positively preconditioned. And, of course, the ideal prospect would have to be accessible. Now, that, too, is worth a point. If a prospect isn't accessible, you might not get to tell your story. Accessibility means more than just an appointment or a face contact. It means having adequate time to listen to your presentation. One very creative salesperson I met related how he would get to see those difficult-to-see people. He would number his business cards after the first call. So on his second drop-by visit to see the boss, he'd give his business card to the receptionist, write number 2 on it, and ask for 10 minutes. In most cases, after 2 or 3 visits, he'd usually get to see the decision-maker. Well, on one particularly good prospect, it just didn't work. Even after 6 calls, he just couldn't get to see this prospect. Now, of course, most salespeople would have just given up at that point, but not this guy. Like Charlie Chaplin, he was persistent, and like Cora Mack, he was fearless. So he wrote a number 7 on his card, gave it to the receptionist to give to the boss, and once again was told no. Well, finally, in desperation, and with the kind of creativity Victor Kiam had with his monkey, he took out another business card, wrote an 8 on the front, and then a note on the back, and asked the receptionist to give it to the boss. A moment later, the door opened. The boss stood there with a big smile on his face and said, "Come on in, you got your 10 minutes. Oh, would you like to know what that sales pro wrote on the back of his card? He wrote, "I can talk to God every morning. Why can't I talk to you for just 10 minutes? Now that's selling creatively and getting access to your prospect. Now the 9th prospect quality has to do with being a center of influence. The ideal prospect has access to other potential prospects and in that way is able to become a center of influence for you. As an example, a retired military officer would be an excellent center of influence to help you reach other military men and women. A financial advisor who is always on the lookout for good investments for their clients might be an excellent center of influence for your product as an investment opportunity. And finally, when a prospect comes to you as a direct referral from a happy and enthusiastic customer, then that prospect earns 1 full point on our 10 to win game plan. Well, there you go. The 10 qualities of the ideal prospect. Now, of course, your list would have to be totally customized for your product and your selling situation. So, as an example, if you're in the mortgage business, your ideal 10-point prospect or borrower might have to have, in addition to some of the qualities that we just mentioned, a good credit rating, sufficient collateral, and job security. If your product is office equipment, like a copy machine, your ideal prospect might be a growing organization that requires top-quality reproductions and fast collating, and presently has a machine coming off lease that's not doing the job. If you're in real estate, you might want your prospect to be a seller who would accept alternatives to the normal financing arrangements. An aircraft salesperson might look for a company with people who need to travel to places where commercial airline flights are not regularly scheduled. Stockbrokers might look for prospects who have funds to invest and want to put their money to work. The herbicide salesperson looks for farmers with weed problems. Well, what do you look for in a prospect? Unless you know exactly what you're looking for, you won't recognize it when you find it. What would happen if you had a product that could only be purchased by a left-handed man with red hair, 6'6" tall, who walked with a limp? I mean, now that's specific. Do you know anybody in your neighborhood that has those qualities? Well, then you won't waste any time looking for them there. You can move on. And that's how this rating system can help you. How would you like to wake up tomorrow morning with a computerized list of 100 prospects who have the money, the urgent need for your product, and an open mind? These prospects also are decisive, totally honest, have heard nothing but good things about you, your product, and your company from a friend who's a satisfied customer of yours. And not only do these prospects want to see you, they are very influential in their communities and businesses. Sound too good to be true? Well, it is. Because there are usually no such prospects, at least not in our game. What you will find are prospects with some of these qualities, perhaps 4 points, maybe 6 or 8, maybe even a 9.5, but no 10s. So if there are no 10-point salespeople and no 10-point sales prospects in this game, how can you sell? Well, remember our rules. A total of 10 wins. You add your score and the prospect score together, and when you reach 10, you both win. This concept became clear to me as I watched other people sell. It just seemed that some very inexperienced salespeople were making a lot of sales, mainly because they had such good prospects. And then as I watched and studied some top sales professionals, they seemed to get business from prospects I never would have dreamed would invest. Well, how could that be? Well, because it takes 10 to win. A beginning salesperson with a low point score, say a 3, can still make a sale when he or she finds a highly qualified 7-point prospect. On the other hand, the professional in that top 1% club who has a high point value, say an 8, can make a presentation to a much less qualified prospect and still sell them, even if the prospect is only a 2 or a 3. So how good are you at studying people, analyzing their behaviors, determining what they might be thinking or feeling? Well, in the world of high-stakes poker, as well as in the world of selling, this skill is vital to winning. And even as a non-poker player, I was fascinated to read a story about Johnny Chan. The headline of a local Arizona newspaper read, "Poker Face," with this subheading, "The world's best poker player now working in Scottsdale area at the Fort McDowell Indian Reservation Casino." Now, as a non-card-playing and non-gambling person, normally an article about gambling would not catch my attention. But like you, the world's best. Now, that sounds like something worth checking out. So after reading about a five-page story by writer James Hibbard, I got one great aha. Now, see if the highlights from that story are helpful to you, too. I learned the game of poker first came over to the United States from Europe in the late 1700s, when it used a 20-card deck and gained popularity on the riverboats of the Mississippi. Eventually, it spread west to the oil fields of Texas, where in the 1970s, it experienced a boom. With so much money in the hands of these oil men, looking for high-risk excitement. Well, Johnny Chan's first casino poker game was at the Golden Nugget Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada. 18 years old, he sat down with $500, and 2 hours later, he got up with $20,000. That was the day Chan said his addiction began. The next day, of course, he lost the $20,000, but not his addiction to gambling and to poker. Now, the point of this story is certainly not to encourage you to gamble or to take up poker. Oh, not at all. It's about how you can become the best at what you do. You see, Johnny Chan approached his gambling like a science. He studied the rules, understood the concepts, and had practiced for thousands of hours. Like great sales professionals, Johnny Chan had become a conscious, unconscious competent, a top 1% club member in his field. But Johnny's father was angry at him for dropping out of the University of Houston's hotel and restaurant management program to be a gambler. But he changed his mind in 1987 when Johnny won the World Series of Poker and came home with his winnings, $875,000. And at the time this article was written about him, he was the only living player in the World Series of Poker to win it twice. Experts study the best, and Johnny Chan is considered to be one of the best ever. The experts say he plays simple, aggressive poker. He folds when he doesn't have it and raises when he does. And what gives him his extraordinary edge, they say, is his even-keeled demeanor and his keen ability to read people. When the cards come out, most players are eager to see what they've been dealt. Chan doesn't even look at his cards. In fact, he'll toss in a $100 ante before he even sees his own cards, if other players' expressions excite him. Johnny says, quote, "It doesn't matter to me if I'm dealt two aces or two and a five. In fact, I don't even need any cards. I just play the person." Oh, wow. Now, that statement was my aha. When he said, "I just play the person," Chan says, "They tell you what they have if you know what to look for." It's like what we said earlier. TLC, think like a customer. Put all your focus on your prospect, not on the product, not the objections, the price, or yourself. All those are the cards. Johnny says he plays the person. Now, how much is your prospect telling you about how to sell him or her? How many clues are being sent out, and are you picking up on them? Here's an example of how Johnny Chan does it. It's a Fort McDowell tournament where Ron Holden has qualified to play the master, Mr. Johnny Chan. Those experts watching report that in the opening hands, not much excitement is going on. Chips are going back and forth. Ron wins some. Johnny wins some. But the students of the game know Johnny is putting Ron to the test, deciding what makes him fold, check, call, or raise. Or in other words, for non-poker players, what's his decision-making style? Wow, I thought. What if in selling, we spend a little more time reading our prospects and finding out how they decide? By asking some good probing qualifying questions, you could do that. Read your prospect well, and you'll both win. Okay, so back to Chan and Holden. After an hour, things have changed. Holden has won the little hands, Chan has won the big hands. The next hand is pivotal, they say. A large pot is on the table. If Chan won, Holden would be out of the game. If Holden won, he could stay in. The players went into a showdown. Holden turned over his hand and had a king high. Chan turned over his hand with an ace high. The crowd gasped. Chan had won. Well, the two men shook hands, photographers snapped pictures, and Johnny Chan was interviewed by a reporter who asked him, "How did you know all he had was a king?" Deadpan Chan looked up and said just three words. "He had tells." And he walked out. What tells does your prospect have? And just as important, what tells do you have? Do you communicate to your prospect, "You know, I got to sell you," or "I don't eat"? Or do your tells say, I'm here to help you solve your problems. Johnny Chan could tell, because he's mastered the art of reading people. So start now, developing that part of your selling skills inventory, reading your prospects. It'll pay off big for you. So how do you implement this 10-to-win concept? Begin by making a list of those 10 qualities you feel are essential to the perfect salesperson for success in your selling situation. There are no shortcuts, no easy ways to being successful. Success comes to those who do the things that failures don't like to do. Let me say that again. Success comes to those who do the things that failures don't like to do. So why don't you stop this message right now and think, okay, what do other salespeople in my profession not like to do? Go ahead. You just stop and think about it for a minute and then come back. Okay, well, what did you come up with? Well, whatever it is, if you did those very things, you'd be so unique, so special, and so successful. Now, here's a great selling story from the insurance business. And you'll be able to relate to it because undoubtedly you have an insurance agent or you do business with an insurance company directly that insures your cars, your home, as well as other special possessions. The story begins in 1981. I had just conducted a seminar for a large group of insurance agents. A few weeks later, Martin Howie, an agent for one of the major insurance companies, stopped by our office and asked to see my wife and business partner, Judy. Martin explained to Judy how he had attended the seminar and had invested in several of the UCAN audio programs that were available at that time and how helpful they were, and he wanted more. "Which ones do you have?" Judy asked. Martin said he had the Build a Better You, the Leadership Series, the Speaking in Front of a Group program, and the Selling Series. "Well," Judy said, "it sounds like you have everything except the Creative Prospecting program." "Oh," Martin said, "I don't need that one because I don't prospect." "You don't prospect, and you're a multiple-line insurance agent," Judy said. "Well, how do you get your prospects then, Martin?" With a big smile, Martin said, "I only work off referrals from my satisfied policyholders." Well, Judy said, "Well, you must be very good." Well, Martin smiled and quietly said, "Well, my customers say I am." And then Judy said, "Well, maybe you should give us a quote for our insurance." Now, using the 10-to-win concept, let's look at the prospects, Judy and Joel Weldon, and how many points we were worth in 1981. Let's use the basic list we discussed earlier. We said a 10-point ideal prospect had 10 qualities. First, the money. Okay, well, that's 1 point. We could pay for and had been paying for our insurance premiums all along with another carrier, so no problem there. Next, a need or a want. Well, unlike some other types of insurance products, auto and fire insurance are required in most states, so you've got to buy them. So sure, we needed to have insurance, and there's another point. The third quality feels the urgency to act now. Well, there was no urgency, really. I mean, we already had coverage, so there's no point there. Fourth is being open-minded. Well, yes, we were open-minded, and we had asked him to give us a quote. So 1 point for that. Five and six were is decisive and is honest. Okay, 2 more points for that. Number seven has been positively conditioned. Well, no, we didn't know Martin before, and we hadn't thought much about his insurance company compared to the hundreds of others that are out there. So no point there. Number eight, being accessible. Well, sure, he could easily see us and talk to us, so 1 more point there. Number nine was, we'll be a center of influence. Well, 1 more point, because we had been in Scottsdale for a number of years, and we sure knew a lot of people. And finally, number 10 was, referred to Martin by a satisfied customer of his. Well, no, we didn't even know any of his customers, and we didn't even really know Martin. So what was our score as a prospect? 7 points. And so to make a sale and win the game, Martin needed to be at least what? A 3. Because 7 plus 3 equals 10. Well, what do you think? Does Martin Howie sound like a 3 or better? Oh, you bet. And from then on, for almost 20 years until he retired, Martin Howie handled all our insurance needs, 16 policies in all. Martin Amazing Howie is what he was called by our entire family. Now, what would happen if you did that with your next prospect, today or tomorrow? Actually wrote down their qualities and assigned a point value to each. Now, not every quality would be worth 1 point on your list. I mean, some could be worth 2, 3, 4, or even 5 points. As an example, if you're selling financial services, a prospect with a lot of money to invest, say they just came into an inheritance or won the lottery, they could be worth 4 or 5 points just for that quality alone. If you're selling commercial air conditioning units, and it's July, and a heat wave hits your city, and you get a call from a commercial building manager whose cooling system just died, that could be 4 or 5 points. If you sold roofing and the prospect's existing roof was leaking on the brand new carpet, that's at least a 4-point quality. So weigh your point scale accordingly. Some qualities might only be 0.5 point, others a 5. Now back to your own point score. What are you worth right now? Well, I'd give you at least 1 point for being self-motivated enough to listen to this program. So let's review that 10-to-win list for salespeople, the one that we discussed earlier. And let's score Mr. Martin Amazing Howie on that 10-to-win list. All right, first was attitude. Well, if I'm the success comes in cans guy, Martin is the I can, I will guy. What a positive attitude. 1 point there for sure. Next was self-motivation. Without a doubt, he's one of the most self-motivated individuals I've ever met. A man who decides what he wants to do and then he does it. Martin was the typical 98-pound weakling as a kid, rejected by the armed forces for being too skinny. So Martin bulks up and becomes part of the Force Reconnaissance Company of the Marine Corps. Later on in his 40s, he decides to build his own home for Cheryl, his wife, and their 6 kids. It turns out to be a 7,000-square-foot masterpiece. Oh, he builds it himself, block by block, brick by brick, and some years later sells it for a small fortune. When he's in his 50s, he decides to become a competitive long-distance century bike racer. That's 100-plus miles, and wins almost every event he enters. After a while, no more challenge there, so he switches to duathlons, running 3.1 miles, then biking 18 miles, then running 3.1 miles, and again, he wins almost every event he enters. I got to stop. I get too excited and carried away when I talk about the amazing Martin Howie. I mean, I could tell you he's trained himself to be a master magician. He's written over 12 books, helped his oldest son, Chad, become one of the youngest Eagle Scouts in the Boy Scouts. Why do I get so excited about his accomplishments? Because I've seen how this man has made the most of what he's been given. He wasn't blessed with the body of a Greek god. As a matter of fact, some people, when they see him in his bike outfit, go, "Good God." He's got only one vocal cord, so his voice isn't imposing. Yet he's built an amazing speaking career since his retirement and has a wonderful family. He's been a dedicated church worker and a mentor to many. When the internet first took off, he was where people went for advice and help. He truly is as close to a 10-pointer as you'll ever find. He's certainly in that top 1% club of all salespeople. And today, he's one of my closest friends, too. Well, what about you? Maybe like Martin, you didn't start out with much. But what can you build with what you've got? Those 10 personal points on your list should be a start for you. So let's skip the other 7 qualities on the 10-to-win list and go right to number 10, being service-minded. Here's one area you have 100% control over, how you service those you sell. On my list of most important qualities, this would have to be right near the top and worth at least 2 or 3 points. When you are so totally focused on your customer and use Willie's promise a lot, deliver even more mission statement, the flood of referrals you'll get will amaze and delight you. How would you like one of your customers to get you, say, 126 sales? What would that be worth to you? Now, that just doesn't come from providing good service, follow-up, solving customers' problems, or being just one heck of a great person. It comes from doing the extraordinary and being amazing. Now let me tell you the rest of the Martin Howie story. And let me stop right here and explain once again why this program contains so many examples about people I know, my friends, my cab driver, my insurance agent. Well, first of all, because these examples will all be new for you. It's not the same stuff you've read about in books or heard on other sales programs. Oh, sure, there are some familiar examples in this program. But the longer, more detailed stories are personal experiences of mine, and I know they're true. They happened to me. Now, you should be doing the same thing, using your personal experiences as a way to improve your selling. Okay, good. Now, come on back with me in time to January 5th, 1982. A broken water pipe floods a large storeroom in our home. After making the effort to save what I could, I called my new insurance agent, Martin Howie, who I had met only twice before. He gets on the phone and says, "I can help you, Joel. Don't worry. Let me put you on hold for a minute." Well, immediately he calls an extraction company to come right over and vacuum up the water, and then gets back on the line with me and says, "I'll be right over." I said, "Martin, what can you do? I already took some pictures of the mess, and I videotaped it, too." Oh, no, I'll be over to help you clean up and save what we can. And he did. Now, how about your insurance agent? Would he or she have done that? Most likely not. I mean, how could they? With thousands of policyholders, perhaps tens of thousands of policyholders, how could they come and help with every claim? Well, since this is my first time that I had a claim of anything like this, it didn't occur to me how unusual this was. It wasn't company policy. It was Martin's policy. How about you? What can you do to go above and beyond what any of your customers would expect you to do? Willie provided the Graceland trip as a bonus. Debbie and Jim Hayes wash and detail every boat they service, no charge. That's one of the reasons they're in MasterCraft's Service Award winner's circle almost every year. And Martin Howie moved box after box of material. The damage turned out to be minimal, only about $4,400. He asked for an estimate, and within 30 hours of receiving that estimate, drove over to my house with a check for the full amount, less my deductible, a check for exactly $3,856. Wow, was I thrilled with that service. What speed, that level of commitment. Sure, any ordinary insurance company would have paid up and sent us a check eventually, but just 30 hours after receiving an estimate? Now you're probably thinking, gee, Joel, this kind of service requires a lot of work, a lot of time, effort, and going the extra mile. Hey, you know it. I was thrilled with the way Martin handled my claim, and you would have been thrilled too. So what do you do when you have a thrilling experience as a customer and the salesperson has amazed you? You start telling others about your experience. And that's just what I did. I told my friends, my neighbors, church members, speaker friends. Well, I just didn't tell them about Martin. I sold them on him. I insisted they at least call him. Remember that fifth personal quality on your personal 10-to-win list? Organization? Well, Martin Howie is organized, and he kept great records, and he knew his CPC numbers. So about a year after the flood, we were talking on the phone about some additional coverage, and he casually mentioned that he had just seen a good friend of mine, and because of my strong endorsement, my friend had given Martin his insurance business. Well, that's great, I said. Have any others contacted you? Well, he said, I'm preparing a report for you, but since you asked, Joel, it's now 126. I said, what do you mean? He said, 126 policies I've written this year alone from your direct referrals. Wow. Whatever it is you sell, what could happen to your selling success if just a few of your customers gave you that many referrals that ended in a sale for you? It is possible when you find the right customers and you keep improving. And someday your customers will add the word amazing between your first and last name. So in the next 24 hours, be sure to make a list of the 10 qualities you feel are essential for your ideal prospect. And then rate yourself. Each morning before you go out to sell and help, review your list and add up your score. Let's say you're a 6 today. Well, what do you need to find in a prospect to make a sale? That's right, at least a 4. You can see how the professionals can close 80%. They're good. They might be worth 8 points. And their prospects are highly qualified too, say 7 points, which totals 15, and that's a sale. That's a big sale. After I devised this system, I set my own maximum point value as a salesperson right at 5, no higher. That's how it was possible for me to make 32 sales out of 37 presentations. It forced me to find prospects who were worth at least 5 points or more, and I did. Would you like to find highly qualified prospects? You can and you will with this 10-to-win rating system. Now let's review what we've covered in the last two messages. Prospecting is a science, so learn the rules and follow them. Beginners spend lots of time prospecting and presenting, while the professionals spend their time selling. There are three types of prospects, the Class A, B, and C. Your goal should be spending your time with the A's, the golden ones. Next, it takes 10 to win. Selling is a game, and it's got to be win-win. When your point value combined with your prospect's point value adds up to at least 10, the sale is made. The goal, then, is to increase your own point score and find highly qualified Class A prospects and to keep accurate records. How good are you now? What's your closing percentage? How many people do you need to contact to make a sales presentation? How many sales presentations do you need to make before you make a sale? What's your CPC, your commission per contact? These are important questions to answer, because your percentages will tell you what your current level of performance is. If you don't know where you are, you don't know what to do to get to where you want to go. By knowing your current percentages, you can measure your progress and evaluate the effectiveness of the new methods that you'll use. So what's your point value right now? How good are you? Are you a 5, a 7, or maybe an 8? Well, once you know your rating or your point value, then you know how many points you're going to need in a prospect, a Class A golden prospect. To find these great high point prospects, is it going to take luck? I don't think so. As a matter of fact, I don't think luck has anything to do with selling. Now, you might not agree with that last statement, but it's very important to how you respond to the rest of this program. So let's discuss luck for just a few minutes. In one dictionary, if you look up the word luck, it's defined as that which seems to happen or come to one by chance. Hey, is that what you're building your sales career on? The chance that good things are going to happen to you? Or at least bad things won't happen to you? Think of it this way. When that farm equipment sales pro called on his farmer prospect, was it just luck that he came up with that response to not wanting to buy on credit and ruining his perfect record? Of course not. He was searching for a creative solution, and when he got it, he acted on it and made the sale. To me, luck is if right now, as I'm in my studio recording this message for you, a 6-pound largemouth bass falls in my lap. Now that would be luck. But if you and I go out on my bass boat with a professional fishing guide and we land a 6-pound bass, that's not luck. We're out on the water, rod in hand, a double-tailed smoke-sparkle jig on our line, following the professional guide's suggestion where to cast. Hey, we're prepared. We're ready for the opportunity. As one wise man said, luck is when opportunity and preparation meet. Or as George Bernard Shaw said, winner of the Nobel Prize in 1925, quote, luck is the residue of design. So what's your design? What do you want to have happen? What do you expect to have happen? Hopefully wonderful things, because in the selling profession, you can make great things occur. Too many people wish each other good luck. Hey, it's not good luck you need. It's good preparation. It's opportunity awareness. Luck is such a common word. I mean, you've heard these expressions, down on one's luck, out of luck, in luck, push one's luck. As luck would have it, try one's luck. It's just a worse luck, or good luck fishing. Now, speaking again of fishing, let me quote from an article by Fred Ward. He's a champion angler. Quote, luck plays a very small role in fishing. In fact, luck has nothing to do with it. He went on to answer the question, why don't fishermen catch more fish? His answer, four parts to it. Number one, fishermen refuse to listen. With fishing being in the top 5 of all sports engaged in America, and tens of millions of fishermen, it's amazing how so many of them just don't listen to those who know. Ask any fishing biologist or fishing expert, and most agree to these facts. 80% of the fish are caught by 10% of the fishermen. Now, hold on, Joel. You might be saying, what has this got to do with me and my selling? I'm not a fisherman. I don't like fishing. I don't even like to eat fish. Well, it has a lot to do with you and your selling. Because when you hear the next three reasons why fishermen don't catch more fish, it's almost exactly what I've heard for decades from sales managers on why their salespeople don't sell more. So let's go back to Fred Ward's statement. And all I'm going to do is read it back to you and substitute the word fishing with selling. So, see if this makes more sense to you. Luck plays a very small role in selling. As a matter of fact, luck has practically nothing to do with it. So, why don't salespeople sell more? Four reasons. Salespeople don't listen. There are so many books, videos, audios, seminars, and professional sales trainers around who have great ideas. Yet, most salespeople don't avail themselves of them. Studies show that 80% of the sales are made by 10% of the salespeople. Get my point now? Fishing and selling have a lot in common. So let's go to Fred's next three points, and then I'll give you the selling points by just switching those words again. Okay, point number two from Fred Ward on why fishermen don't catch more fish. Fishermen don't change their habits. In an age of high-tech devices to save time, effort, and energy, many still do it like they used to do it. Point three. Fishermen don't study the fish. The old fishing truism still applies. 90% of the fish are in 10% of the lake. 90% of the fishermen fish in the other 90% of the lake. That doesn't hold fish. The ordinary non-fish-catching fishermen don't study the fish's feeding habits, the structures below the water temperature, and clarity. And number four, the reason fishermen don't catch more fish is fishermen keep thinking fishing is luck. Oh, how true. If most fishermen had to feed themselves and their ability to catch fish, there would be a lot of skinny folks around and a lot more big, happy fish around. So let's look at the other three points. Point number two, on why salespeople don't sell even more. Salespeople don't change their habits. Like Willie Loman in Arthur Miller's play Death of a Salesman. Loman was in total denial of the world. His customers were telling him his methods were ineffective and outdated, and yet he kept right on denying it. He didn't or wouldn't confront his weaknesses. Well, you don't have to be like Willie Loman to resist change. But so often salespeople say, well, this is the way I've always done it. And now point number three. Salespeople don't study their prospects. That same old truism from fishing might apply here too. 90% of the sales are made by 10% of the salespeople. And 90% of the high point prospects are found by only 10% of the salespeople. Because ordinary salespeople don't study prospects and don't use each new experience to improve their prospect knowledge. And finally, point four. Salespeople keep thinking selling is luck. Well, it's not. You can make it happen if you accept responsibility and forget excuses. Now think of this ad in a small town newspaper. Next time you think you want to get luckier. Lost dog, blind in right eye, left ear, missing from fight, lame in rear legs from car accident, burns on back from a fire, answers to the name Lucky. So forget luck. Selling is a science, and you can get predictable, proven results when you prepare for the opportunities you find each day, whether you're looking for prospects, largemouth bass, or gold. Do you know where most of the world's gold is? I mean, real gold, like the welcome stranger, that massive nugget that Deason and Oates found in Australia. It's between wherever you are now and Australia. That's right, it's at the bottom of the ocean. Scientists estimate that there's at least 9 million tons of pure gold in the world's oceans. That's 180 times the total of all the gold that's been dug out of all the mines in the history of mankind. Well, why don't you see anybody going out to sea and mining it? Because it's too difficult to extract it at a profit. The gold flecks are so tiny and scarce, it's just not worth the effort. So please remember this example. As you go out prospecting and calling on your accounts, your clients, your buyers, your diners, passengers, patrons, your dealers, depositors, or whatever you want to call your customer, the 10-to-win rating system is designed to help you follow the plan of the wisest prospectors in the days of the Old West, the experts, the top 1% club members who worked smarter instead of harder and ended up striking it rich. Sure, some were lucky and just happened to dig in the right places. But the most successful ones prospected scientifically. Today, most salespeople work way too hard at prospecting. It's not necessary. The smart way is to use the 10-to-win rating system and invest your time wisely. So be sure to invest your time where your efforts will be most profitable. And remember, it takes 10 to win. And when you invest the time and effort to increase your score, you'll increase the chance that someday your customers will call you amazing. Make it a great day and amaze your customers.